This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Maryland's rolling. They've won 7 of their last 8. They climbed to 20th in the latest 2 polls, the AP and the coaches poll. Some of the bracketologists out there now have them as a 5 seed. Lenardi just put them as a 5 seed. They're climbing. They are a very good team. And I had Gary Williams on my podcast yesterday, and I want you to listen to it. I started off by saying to him that on Friday's show, after they beat Nebraska on the road, I said, and Denton will back me up, and I was not, you know, gummied up by any stretch of the imagination. Maybe some of you thought I was, but I said, this team's, you know, starting 5 in particular, but this team right now looks to me like a deep, deep run team into March and not far away, if not already, a legitimate Final Four contender. So I asked Gary if he thought I was nuts for saying that.
I definitely feel when their starters, as long as they don't get tired, they can stay healthy, things like that. That's as good a starting five as I think you'll see, because I've been watching the games pretty close, and you know the combination inside with Quinn and Reese. Very few teams have that. I haven't seen many teams in the country with their ability to pass the basketball. Quinn especially is a great passer, interior passer, which is really hard to, you know, pass around that lane area. He made a couple of passes last night where just, you know, guys in the NBA can't make those passes. I mean, they're just sensational. Now, he doesn't, you know, he's a freshman, and people forget that, I think, sometimes, that he's young, and he's not as consistent with those things as you'd like to see him right now. But at the same time, in the Big Ten, I don't think there's a better freshman in the Big Ten than Quinn. And, of course, Reese is really, I think, because of the attention put on Quinn, Reese has kind of been there playing great, really improved from last year, improved his free throw shooting, all those things, and not getting much attention, which is fine because, you know, it's nice to be a little under a radar until you get to the NCAA tournament. Then you want the attention. But the team, the combination of inside play plus the ability to shoot the three, which they had none of that last year in terms of shooting the three, has really made a difference in the team. And, you know, when they're on their game, I think they play as well as anyone. And one of the things I really like as an old coach is their pace of play. I don't think anybody is going up and down quicker than they are, a little full court pressure to put pressure on the other team, make them work. Last night I thought with the Iowa was up 4 at halftime. They had made every shot, it seemed like, they took in the first half. And all of a sudden, the fact that Maryland had the pace of the game up where they wanted it to, those same shots didn't go down in the second half. And that might be Maryland's defense, but it might also be the fact that the legs weren't there for Iowa, because they had some guys that could really shoot the ball in the first half of that game.
You know, you've told me several times over the years, you can't win six in a row in March if you can't score. You got to be able to score. Yeah. And your comment just about the pace, I know in watching this team how pleased you've been in watching the pace of this team. I mean, is this the best scoring Maryland team we've seen since 2002?
I think so, and their stats back it up. You can't shut off any time you're playing against a team where you can't. You can shut down one guy. Well, you could probably do that if you have a good plan defensively. But when you have two or three guys with the shooting threats that they are on the court all the time, it's really difficult. And you get cautious on defense. You're afraid to lose your man. You get cautious transition defense. You know, you worry so much about getting back on defense that you don't have an offensive rebound. You worry getting back on defense so you're not as aggressive going to the basket with the ball. And you never know what area wins games for you. But I think the pace of play, both offensively and defensively, that Maryland puts out there this year, it's really causing problems for team. And, you know, you look at their net ranking and things like that, whatever, I think they're 20th today in the AP, but I think they're a much better team than 20th in the country right now.
Yeah, they're 14th in KenPom. They're 14th in the net. They're 20th in both polls. And all of the advanced numbers certainly see it the way that you see it. They've got a top 20 offensive efficiency team and a top 20 defensive efficiency team per the KenPom numbers. I want to ask you about some of the players, but two things before we get to that. Does the lack of scoring off the bench concern you?
You know, I always felt if your bench guys could rebound, play defense, knew the offense well enough to get the ball to the right people, there's a reason why you have five stars. Very rarely do you have, you know, a six-man that's as good as your starters. You know, you'd like to, but, you know, there's a reason the first five are out there. And so as long as play doesn't slip, in other words, it might be one less three-point shooter coming in, but as long as the level of play doesn't slip and you can keep that pace going, then those guys are doing a great job. I think they, you know, I mean, how many guys do you want to score in double figures? You know, I mean,
I know, you got five.
In double figures.
Right.
What are you supposed to do, have seven in double figures?
Right,
you know,
right,
come on.
Right, yeah.
So, that doesn't bother me at all. As long as there's no slippage in play, the defense is good, the rebound is good, the ball gets to the right guys that can shoot the ball, then, you know, so what? And, hey, college basketball now, those commercials, 16, 12, 8, and 4,
yeah,
every half, are at least 3 minutes by the time the ball's put back in play. And they're probably a little longer than that in the NCAA tournament. So I think you can get away with playing five, six, seven guys without too much of a problem. Of course, foul problems, you know, can come up at any time, and that's the wild card in the NCAA tournament. You never know. You get a crew that you haven't seen all year, all of a sudden they start calling everything tight, and maybe the bench has to, you know, be more of a factor in that situation.
You averaged, your team averaged 85 points a game. You were the third leading scoring team in the country in 2002. This team's averaging 83.5 points per game, and they're currently the 14th leading scoring team in the country. Now, their efficiency numbers on defense say that they're a good defensive team. They were not a good defensive team in the first half against Iowa, but tell me what you think of them defensively. Is it good enough to, you know, hold up over six games when we get to one and done in March?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you have to be careful. You have to make sure that you don't fall asleep defensively. Against Iowa, they're a little different. You know, you have to pick up really early against Iowa because they're going to launch threes from all over the place. Iowa's always played that way.
Yep.
And so you have to pick up early against Iowa. You can make some mistakes against some teams, but that's, you know, and this is just personal, that's why I think you have to try to run every time you get a rebound, because you put pressure on the other team, and that pressure isn't just physical, it's mental pressure. They have to worry about getting back, the whole thing, and all of a sudden, if you walk the ball up court, well, they don't have to worry about that stuff. You know, they're going to be back in time, and they'll set up their defense or whatever, but Iowa comes right after you, and I think it took a while for Maryland to adjust to that, that they put the ball up so quickly. But once they did, and the combination of wearing down a team because of Maryland's pace, you know, showed up in the second half. I mean, they go from scoring, where they get 51 the first half down to 24 or something like that, the second half.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it's incredible, but that's the way it works. You know, if you can wear a team down, that's probably, there's no stat on that, you know, so people, you know, they're so stat conscious nowadays, but there's no stat on that. You know, you just play your game and you hope you're wearing the other team out as the game goes on.
I said last week that Derek Queen's the best freshman basketball player at Maryland since Joe Smith. Do you agree with that?
Yes. The only guy, I'm just talking about the guys I coach now. The only guy I'd say was Grievous Vasquez.
He was great.
Grievous was one of those players that really got better as he progressed in his career, where Queen's come in and, you know, he's just stepped it up right away. Now, he's still a freshman, and there are parts of his game that bother me a little bit sometimes and things like that. You think he can do more, but all of a sudden, you look at the stats at the end of the game, and, you know, the guy's got double-doubles all over the place, and, you know, I'm there criticizing him for maybe one pass he didn't make or something like that. So he is a throwback player. He is not a leaper. I wouldn't consider him a guy that gets 2 feet over the rim, but his knowledge, his ability to use the Euro step for a guy 6'10", all those things make him different. And see, I always like players that were a little different, like a Vasquez, for instance.
Yep.
You know, that's how Queen is. He's just different than a lot of guys because he's not going to just muscle you at 6'10". He's not going to go out at 6'10" and shoot threes, but he's going to beat you by the way he plays, and he can take over a game. He's getting to the point now where they run a thing where they get him the ball
the elbow
right at the top of the circle,
yeah,
and they get the other four guys spread who can shoot on the three-point line. And when he goes to the basket, it's really hard because if you help on him, he's going to find an open three-point shooter. And I think he's the reason for, even though he doesn't shoot threes, he's the reason for the success of a lot of guys shooting threes because you have to help on him when he puts it on the floor.
Yeah, I thought of Gravis. Melo Trimble was obviously the freshman year he had was sensational. And I thought of Gravis, and obviously Steve Blake started, you know, for you from day one. But in terms of the overall impact on the game, I mean Joe Smith was, you know, the freshman of the year. I don't think Derek Queen's gonna be the freshman of the year, but he's got a chance to be the freshman of the year in the Big Ten. And like you said, he's starting now to get to the point where, like, they just kept feeding him last night, and he just kept creating. Yeah. How about that little 1 foot, you know, step back, fall away shot that he shoots? Like, it really is, it's old school, almost Jokic-like.
You're going, where'd that come from? Well, you know where that came from. That came from Europe. That's not an American
exactly.
move.
Right.
That came from Europe. And, you know, he's smart enough at 19. Okay, I'll take that. I'll put that into my game. I'm going to work on that, you know, and get good at that. And when he does that, you're talking about a 6'10 guy stepping back.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a 6 foot guy stepping back. And so you it's unblockable. You know, if he can make it, it's going in because you can't block it.
Well, and he's got a great soft stroke, too. I'm actually surprised he's passed on some of the open looks he's had from three, because remember in the Purdue game in December, he knocked down a couple of them. I think he's capable of shooting the three. Do you?
Well, I think that's, if he comes back next year, I think that would be something that I'm sure you'd see. But we've got enough three-point shooters right now when
True.
The starters are out there on the court where he would be the fifth best three-point shooter. And so, I'm not sure that, Coach Willard wants him to take a lot of threes. But like you said, if he makes one, that really creates problems because now you got to go all the way out, you know, past the top of the circle to guard him.
How about the improvement of Julian Reese? It starts at the free throw line. That's the obvious thing to everybody. But just as an offensive player overall, I mean, he's become a playmaker. He knocks down that mid-range consistently. Did you see this kind of improvement coming?
I was concerned because I didn't see a big jump his junior year. You know, I was worried that maybe, players level off, which is fine. But he's gotten so much better, like for the things you said. And you can see the confidence in him. It built, you know, from December on. He's just become a very confident player. I always thought before when he'd miss a shot or have struggled at the free throw line, it would really affect his game. But now he's got that confidence thing going where, okay, I'll miss, but I'm going to make the next one. You know, that's not a problem.
Yeah. You mentioned the shooters, Gillespie, Rice, and Miguel. I mean, they're deadly, and it just spaces the floor incredibly. Is Gillespie the most important player on this team?
Well, I think in terms of the way a coach wants to have his team play, yes. In other words, he's really quick in advancing the ball in transition. He puts tremendous pressure on the defense because he's a very good passer, but he can also stop and hit the three if they just fall back on defense or if he penetrates. People forget he finishes over the rim. I think the difference between Gillespie and a couple of the other point guards is his size that you've seen the last, say, 10, 15 years. The difference is he finishes over the rim, where I think the rest of those guys were really good, but they finished under the rim.
Yep.
So he's not afraid to take it in there in transition. And his ability to pass, if they do help off of him, you know, just creates all kinds of things for the players. And to me, that's the key to the whole offense, Gillespie leading the way. But at the same time, all those guys look for each other right now. You would think with some of those guys being outstanding shooters, they'd be a little selfish, but they're not. They're very open to giving the ball to a guy that has. You saw it last night a lot when, you know, there'd be a double and the ball would be swung around to the other side. Yep. Well, the one guy would catch it. He'd be kind of open, but he had a guy in the corner that was way open, and that guy would get the ball every time. And I think that's been a key to their success offensively this year.
All right, how are you handling this portion of the schedule? They've got five games left. They are clearly in the tournament. Now it's about working their way up in the Big Ten standings, improving their seeding. How are you communicating the importance of these games to the players? Because seeding is important once you get to March.
It is, and what you just said is what the players are hearing. And it's, as a player and as a coach, you want to hear all good things. But as a coach, you have to make sure the players understand that all those good things will be bad things very quickly if you lose a game this
right.
time of year. And so that's your job. You can't be a nice guy in practice. You have to get on them for making mistakes in practice just like you would in November, that type of thing. And they know they're good by now. You can't shake their confidence. If I'm a coach, I'm whatever I say in practice, I'm not going to shake their confidence because they know they're good. They've beaten enough good teams to know that. And so you just want to keep it right there. You don't necessarily have to get better, but you want to keep it where you are. And you want to take that into the Big Ten tournament and into the NCAA tournament. I always told the team in the NCAA tournament that, hey, we don't have to play better. We got here for a reason. You know, we just have to play at that level. Because I think sometimes you get in the NCAA tournament, you think you have to play great, but you just have to play the way you play. But these guys, I think the key is how do you stay current? In other words, we're talking about the Big Ten tournament, the NCAA tournament. Well, you can't even be thinking about that as a team. You have to think about, they play what, Southern California
in
the next
yep.
game. Well, that's all you can that's all you can do right now is beat Southern Cal. You can't worry about Michigan State, you know, the teams you got coming up. You've got to beat Southern Cal. You can't afford or you're going to be probably a 9 or 10 point favorite in that game. And so you have to win that game. That game would be considered a bad loss because you've gotten good. You know, and so now, you know, you have to take care of business in the next game.
What kind of team is the team that will give Maryland the most trouble?
You know, I don't know the teams that well. That you know, I know Michigan has the two big guys and,
right.
and things like that. What they're going to try to do, I think, down the stretch here is really bang Reese and Queen, see how much contact they like. In other words, last night, Iowa did a great job in the first half. But they weren't physical inside at all.
Right.
There was nothing going on physically inside. And so if I was playing Maryland, I think that's I test Queen especially because he's a freshman, hadn't been through it yet, and just see how he responds to getting bounced around a little bit. And, you know, it might cost me some fouls, things like that. But at the same time, you have to figure out a way to win if you're playing against Maryland, because you're not going to win a shooting contest against Maryland. You know, on most nights, Maryland's got better shooters than you do. And so, you know, what else can we do? You know, what can we do? Well, you know, we might be able to disrupt their offense, because you take away their inside guys, and all of a sudden the three-point shots get tougher, because you can be up on those three-point shooters tougher because the inside guys aren't a factor tonight. And so right now you don't see many teams better than Queen and Reese inside. I mean, that's just the way it is. I'm looking at the Big Ten. You know, name a front line that has two better inside players.
I mean, Michigan's got the two big guys, you know.
That's good.
The team.
But
yeah.
So is Reese and Queen.
Right, you know. I agree. You mentioned it, like, they're ranked 20th, but it's really not representative of how well they're playing, and I think what their potential is. I mean, you had teams that were ranked in the top, you know, 10 consistently, and it was about, you know, playing your best heading into this time of year. This team appears to be doing that. There's something about watching this team where it really seems like they're almost impossible to guard.
Well, I think the way they, you know, and this is a credit to Kevin Willard, the way they play, they're going to take advantage of any mistake you made. If you don't get back on defense, they're quick enough, and they're used to advancing the ball quickly after a rebound. You know, some teams, they'll try to look to see if the team makes a mistake getting back, but Maryland just takes it down every time, anticipating you making a mistake. And there's a big difference in style of play with that. And I just think there's so many things when you play Maryland to prepare for. You know, you got to worry about their pressure defense, okay, number one. Number two, they switch everything a lot of times. Well, how are we going to handle that? They're a very good passing team, and they can make threes. So all of a sudden, when you want to spend this time of year an hour and 15 minutes in practice getting ready for somebody, you got to spend 2 hours on the floor getting ready for Maryland, and I think that's a terrific advantage. And the other thing I was thinking of, Maryland lost in the last, I guess their only loss in what, their last eight games was at Ohio State.
Yeah.
They lost on the last second shot that went in off the glass, basically.
Right. They had a 17-point lead.
You dropped from 18 to 25.
Right.
Are Maryland people upset about that? I mean, I was really upset about that because you look at teams like Kansas is still in the top 25.
Yeah.
They don't belong in the top 20. I don't care how good they were 3 years ago. They don't belong in the top 25. And here's Maryland. We lose seven spots for losing on a last-second shot away from home.
I know.
And, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
You know, I asked Kevin Willard about just, you know, being ranked because when they moved into the polls that week and they were ranked 18th, I actually had them on right before the Ohio State game. And I said, you know, with KenPom and with net rankings and with everybody kind of understanding that sometimes the AP and the coaches poll really don't reflect necessarily what the tournament field will look like, do you care? And he said, yeah, we do care. It's something that, you know, so it sounds like you do too.
Oh, yeah. The average fan, all that KenPom stuff, that's great. You
true.
Know. But the average fan, they look at the polls. They come out today or whatever, and you look at them, and I'm looking at that, and I'm going to, as a former Maryland student and player,
and coach,
forget the coaching thing. I'm just really upset. I'm looking at our, you know, our student section. I hope those guys are crazy about that something like that happened, because it doesn't happen to every team. You know, there's teams that are almost invincible, and once they get into the top 25, they won't vote them out, you know, no matter what. And I think that's been a fight we've always had in Maryland. I think Willard is continuing the fight.
Well, what is it's a bias. It's basically allowing big brands like Kansas and Carolina and Duke, and Carolina stinks this year, to absorb losses when it comes to rankings much better than the field, the rest of everybody. And
we win seven games in a row, and then we lose one, although they're not that good. You know, I mean, Kansas loses two out of three, and they're still in the top 25.
That is competitive Gary there at the end talking about, you know, Kansas and the big names being ranked and not falling as much when they lose, which, by the way, is true. We've seen that forever. You know, when Duke and Carolina and Kansas lose, they don't drop as many spots as everybody else does. Maryland right now is ranked 20th, but it is not even close to a reflection of what they are right now. KenPom's got them at 14. The net rankings have them at 14. They're one of only eight teams, I think, in the country that have a top 20 efficiency rating on both offense and defense. They're one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. They have probably the best backcourt, triumvirate of three-point shooters in the country with Gillespie and Miguel and Rodney Rice, and they have a pair inside that aren't matched by many teams in the country. Their issue, Denton, and I knew you've been paying attention to it, their issue more than anything else is depth. They don't have much of it at all in terms of scoring. So if they, in a one-and-done format, if they were to get into some foul trouble, they might be in trouble. But if they play their starting five for, you know, the 34, 35 minutes plus of NCAA tournament games with the longer breaks, the longer commercials, they're one of the most difficult teams in America right now to guard. That is not a Kevin excited about Maryland basketball take. That is a backed up by, you know, offensive statistics, both traditional and advanced take. Maryland right now is one of the most difficult teams in America to guard in terms of their starting five. It's the bench that is the issue. Like, I if you can get to their bench, if you can get them in foul trouble, if a game's called super closely, and, you know, you get Queen and Reese and one of their backcourt players, and you got to play the bench significant minutes, that would be problematic, I think. Other than that, I mean, am I that far off with how good Maryland is right now?
I mean, every single metric that we look at, you know, when we get towards the end of the year and you run us through the model of these are the teams with the numbers that say they can win
a championship.
They're going to fit it. Unless something drastic happens, they're going to fit it. So I don't think it's out of control to suggest that they can run the table. Because you're going to see, like, a lot of the SEC teams are very highly ranked right now, and I get it. That conference, top to bottom, is pretty crazy. But you're going to see a lot of flaws with these teams because they're all going to play one another. I think there's a lot of opportunity for Maryland to shoot up here, and then people are going to start taking them more seriously.
Yeah. There is going to be the game against Michigan State a week from tomorrow night. They still have to play USC at home Thursday night. And students, I mean, come on, man. What else do you want? You got a team that's as hot as any team in the country right now. They're going to be a tough out in March. And the student section was embarrassing on Sunday against Iowa. What a performance that was in the second half. They outscored Iowa 54-24. But the Michigan State game a week from tomorrow night, that will be one of those games that will be a very, very tough ticket and will be a pumped-up crowd, even though it is a 6:30 start. They should change that to the later start time, but I don't think they're going to. All right, back to football when we come back. And the question is, Cincinnati can't sign all three of their stars. What if their pass rusher is available via a trade? Should Washington be interested? We'll discuss that next.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the Cincinnati Bengals have three stars that they need to make big decisions on. Number one is Ja'Marr Chase. That decision isn't a hard one. They're going to sign Ja'Marr Chase to a long-term contract extension. We saw the news yesterday that the team plans on giving T. Higgins a non-exclusive franchise tag with the intention of ultimately getting to a long-term deal with T. Higgins. Well, the Bengals also yesterday, the reporting was that they plan on pulling off a rather expensive offseason by signing two extensions, Chase, Higgins, and their star defensive end pass rusher, Trey Hendrickson. Jeremy Fowler reported that yesterday, that sources tell him that the team intends on securing long-term deals with all three of those players. That will not be cheap. Denton and I talked about T. Higgins last hour. You know, typically you don't view good roster building as paying two receivers $30-plus million a year, and that's what they will end up doing if they get Higgins signed to a long-term deal. You know they're going to get a deal done with Chase Young. So let's just assume for a moment that they're not able to pull it off. Trey Hendrickson gave the Bengals an ultimatum recently. He essentially said he wants a big extension or he wants to be traded in the offseason. He's got 1 year left on a deal that's going to pay him roughly $21 million next year. His quote during an interview last week with Pat McAfee was, quote, "I want to help win a Super Bowl for Cincinnati if I'm there or not," closed quote. The implication being that he wants an extension or a trade that would net the team draft choices in return. For those that don't know, because I do think that there is a sense that Trey Hendrickson, of the big named pass rushers in the league, you know, you start with Myles Garrett and you talk about guys like TJ Watt. Really, Garrett and Watt are the two superstars. Both Boses get more attention than Trey Hendrickson. Micah Parsons gets more attention than Trey Hendrickson. Max Crosby gets more attention than Trey Hendrickson. But Trey Hendrickson, over the last two regular seasons, has 35 sacks, finished number one in the league this year with 17.5 sacks, and last year finished second in the league to TJ Watt's 19 with 17.5 sacks. He was drafted by the Saints when Sean Payton was the coach. Denver has a potential need for another pass rusher, but he's played the last 4 years in Cincinnati, and the last 2 years at age 29 and 30 years old, he will turn 31 next year during the season, are his two best seasons by far. But he had good seasons. His first year in Cincinnati, he had 14 sacks. And his last year in New Orleans, which got him the free agent deal in Cincinnati, he had 13.5 sacks. So if he's available, we've talked about Myles Garrett. We've talked about Deebo Samuel. But in terms of the need for an edge pass rusher, would you trade, and it would be less than what you'd have to give up for Myles Garrett, but would you trade this year's first-round pick, number 29 overall, and maybe at least a third-rounder, a night two pick, for Trey Hendrickson? I'll ask you that question first, Denton. Would you do it?
I'd absolutely do it for a guy that has had 17.5 sacks in the last 2 years. And I think you get him. One, I don't think that you're getting somebody spectacular at 29 or at least someone that's going to be as good as Trey Hendrickson, unless maybe like James Pierce Jr. drops out of Tennessee. But we'll talk about him more as we get closer to the draft. I don't think you're getting somebody better than Trey Hendrickson, more likely than not, at number 29. And you're not going to then have to pay out the wazoo like you would for a Myles Garrett, where you're resetting the market. You're not resetting the market with Trey Hendrickson. You're paying him a lot, but you're not resetting the market. So I'd definitely be all for Trey Hendrickson coming and playing here.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, a lot of the advanced numbers would say he's not the run stopper that Myles Garrett is. And that's the one thing that I think they need to do more than anything else, is they have to shore up their run defense. I think we would all agree that if that's not your top priority in the offseason, it's in the top two. They were a bad run defense team. Who knows? Maybe they'll come to the conclusion in the offseason that they've got to tweak the scheme, you know, that they have good players and they should. better run-stopping team, but they've got to tweak the scheme. That is not out of the realm of possibility, because like we said all season long, not that I'm saying that everybody agreed with it, but I think they had good players. You know, Bobby Wagner's a really good player, played well. Frankie Louvu, a really good player. They had player. Chin in the box was pretty damn good last year. And yet, it did not, for whatever reason, add up to a good run-stopping team. But let's assume that they don't think it's scheme. They think it's talent. I need the run-stopping player as much as I need the pass rusher. Now, I saw a stat on Trey Hendrickson. This is a pretty good one, too, is that where is it? I had it a second ago. That Hendrickson last year had 12 and a half sacks in one score games. Now, most of the games Cincinnati played, I think, were one score games, but it was the most in the NFL. So he was not only a pass rusher that led the league with 17 and a half sacks, but he was a big time clutch sack guy. He was number one in the league. TJ Watt was two. Danielle Hunter was three. And Miles Garrett was four in terms of the most sacks in one score games. Now, you got to play in a lot of one score games to get a lot of sacks. You know, Cincinnati played in a lot of one score games. Pittsburgh, I'm assuming, played in a lot of one score games. Cleveland did not, or not as many, I don't think. I would be willing, if you gave me the choice of giving up two firsts for Miles Garrett or a first and a third for Trey Hendrickson, I'm going to make the deal for Garrett. He's younger and he's a better all-around player.
Yes, if Garrett is available, Garrett is the option that you go with. But my thinking and my thought process was that maybe they're going to ask for more than two firsts, or maybe Cleveland's going to play hardball. And if they're playing hardball and you can get Trey Hendrickson and kind of convince Cincinnati, like, hey, you don't have enough money to pay for all these dudes, you're going to lose him to free agency at some point unless you want to do the franchise tag bit again for the third year in a row. Here's a first-round pick, so you can get somebody younger. We'll take him. See you. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I like Hendrickson. He's great. He is a phenomenal pass rusher, no doubt. This draft is loaded with edge players, though, Denton.
It is. It's,
most people think it is.
It's great. This draft class, we haven't talked a ton about draft yet, obviously, because we're kind of making that transition because our team was so good this year. But this year's draft class is particularly deep at the positions that Washington needs to fill. Edge, wide receiver in the later rounds, offensive linemen, specifically guys on the outside, the tackle positions. Like, there's a really good crop of talent that Adam Peters,
running back
as well. There's a really good crop of talent that Adam Peters is going to have to make some tough decisions with, but that's a nice position to be in.
Yeah. Man, the running back thing, it's going to be interesting to see if they think they have a need there or if they think it was more O-line. There's going to be so much that we learn by their off-season moves about the way they think about the team last year. Everything they do in the offseason will be big tells on how they evaluated the team, because it may be different than the way we've evaluated the team.
It'll also be interesting to see what their philosophy is of last year. It was very much best player available. Do they still stick with that, or do they start to fill the positions of need?
Oh, you're talking about in the draft.
Yeah, just the draft in general, yeah. And how that balances out with free agency.
Well, to me, that's not a philosophy draft-wise that changes with the state of the team. I think that most of the great general managers will tell you the biggest mistakes they make is when they draft based on need rather than best player available. Now, it's, you know, I think the free agency, everything's going to be telling. And I say that they may have different views of the season than we do in specific areas. And I think I just pointed one out. I am curious to know why they, and if they do know, and I would assume that they have an opinion, why they weren't better defensively, specifically stopping the run. Part of it is what we sort of identified towards the end of the season. They played a ridiculous number of teams that ran the ball well with elite backs. We've gone through the list. Every elite back in the league they essentially faced, with the exception of Christian McCaffrey. right? They faced Barkley twice. They faced Derrick Henry. They faced Bijan Robinson. They faced Jahmyr Gibbs in the postseason. They faced even a guy like Chuba Hubbard, who was, you know, top 10 in rushing. Bucky Irving, James Conner. These guys were all, Rico Dowdle, for Christ's sake, finished 12th in the league in rushing. And he wasn't even a guy they were giving the ball to early in the season. They really faced backs. Next year's schedule, I haven't focused on the running backs that they face next year, but I want to know what they think the big issue was. Do they think it was the competition? Do they think it was the players? Do they think it was the scheme? And if it's the scheme, what will they do about it? Will they say that it was the D-line coach? Will they say it was Joe Witt Jr.? That is an answer that I don't think we've asked everybody. You know, I asked Logan about that recently. Why were they? And he said, it's the million-dollar question. There are lots of potential answers to the question. Next year, by the way, they have Bijan Robinson. They've got Barkley twice. They got Bijan Robinson. They got Josh Jacobs. Is Aaron Jones going to be in Minnesota again? I don't know if that's a big deal or not. The Chiefs. They've got Jahmyr Gibbs. They've got really good backs again on the schedule next year. They got the guys in Seattle. I count both of them. It's becoming more of a running back league in many ways. All right, we'll finish up with a couple of other things when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. Kyrie Irving said he wants to play for Team Australia and hopes to gain eligibility in time to represent Australia in the 2028 LA Summer Olympics. If you're asking why, well, he was born in Melbourne, Australia. And over the weekend, he apparently told reporters, I'm in the process right now trying to figure out what's going to be the best route for me. There's a lot of paperwork. And by the way, the U.S. has to approve that. The USA Basketball, FIBA, and Basketball Australia would all have to approve it. And Kyrie said, obviously, Team USA has a big decision to make. He'd be 36 at that point. How would you feel about Kyrie Irving going and playing for... How long did he live in Melbourne? He was born in Melbourne. Did he live there? He had an older... Born in Australia, 1992... He relocated at 2 years old to the U.S. He was two.
He was left off of Team USA this offseason, though.
What'd you say?
He was left off Team USA. He hasn't played since 2016.
Well, this is part of his, you know, push, because when he's 36, he's probably not going to make the All-Star team.
Yeah. I would have loved Kyrie this offseason, though.
Man, he can handle the ball. He's actually looked great at times this year. Not that I'm paying attention. All right, we're done. Chris is next.